Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Good evening again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, October 17th, 2012, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by the legendary Les Thatcher, and coming up this evening at about 8:30, going to have on Dr. Tom Pritchard again to talk a little bit more about his career. Last time he was on, we talked a lot about philosophy and training and just some of his thoughts coming out of working for WWE for so long. But tonight we're going to talk a little bit to him about his career and some of the things that he has done. I am bowing out gracefully around 9 p.m. or so, but we got a pretty good relief pitcher coming in. Some guy named Mike Mooneyham from the Charleston Post and Courier is going to come on and talk with Les and with Dr. Tom. And speaking of Les, how are you this evening, sir?
I thought you'd finally get around to me.
Got to set the table.
Yes. You got one of those Mike Johnson lead-ins. You guys tell a book. Anyway, no, I'm fine. I had a good weekend up in Blue Ridge, Georgia. Good turnout. All the kids worked really hard. Woody Hollander, the promoter, gracious host. They got a great building up there, Mike. They really do. And pretty part of the country. I'd never been in that part of Georgia before. Up around the Ocoee River, where in '96 they did the Olympic stuff when they had the Olympics here, but anyway, good time, had a great time. Rich Tate, by the way, was AWOL, but
why am I not surprised by that? He stole your lunch, doesn't he?
He called the house and left some flimsy message. I don't know, you know.
Well, I don't know what you want to start with this week. It was a busy last weekend with all this stuff going on. The UFC show, which was obviously saved by Anderson Silva, and then now we've got the announcement of John Jones and Chael Sonnen, and obviously for much later on, and we'll talk about that as it gets closer to it next year. But that had taken place along with TNA's pay-per-view, which, believe it or not, I actually thought was pretty darn good, and then obviously the situation in WWE right now with booking yourself into a corner with Fiend pay-per-views and injuries and things like that happening, obviously with John Cena, which is why we're going to get Ryback and CM Punk and coming up here at Hell in the Cell. I guess we'll start with Raw on this past Monday night, and obviously the inclusion of Ryback and you know, you've talked about it a lot. I said it on Sunday. I know Dave Meltzer said it late Sunday night, or at least on Monday. Theme pay-per-views, I don't like them. You don't like them. They cause you to book yourself into a corner and have issues when something like this arises. What is your feeling about, obviously, CM Punk's a damn fine worker. Ryback is one hell of a big challenge for him, and I guess he's looking forward to that a little bit. But what's your feeling on that? And what's your feeling about the route they should go? Because, again, you don't want to beat Ryback, I guess. You don't want to beat CM Punk, at least in my opinion. What do you do when you're trapped in a cell?
Well, see, there's the problem. You can't DQ. I tell you what happened in Knoxville Sunday night, because my son took my grandson to the matches there. And on my way home Monday, I stopped and had lunch with my son. Anyway, Ryback lost by DQ in Knoxville, so I guess that's what they're doing on the road. They can't do that in the cell. And who else? I don't see putting the belt on him, because if they do, they can't leave it on him for any length of time. From a technical standpoint, this is a test for Punk, in as much as can he carry this guy to a better match than the guy himself is capable of. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. It's just, first of all, your champion should be able to do that out anyway, should be able to elevate, the people they work with. And, I don't know. You're right. They're painting themselves into a corner. And I started to say interesting. It may not be really very interesting to see how they get themselves out of it. But I don't know. If they beat Punk, they're going to put it right back on him, I'm sure. I don't know about the next night, but, maybe by the next pay-per-view or something. Again, which is of no value to Ryback. But see, they've got no experience, depth, so it's what they've got to run with.
Do you
which
think
is
they,
scary,
do they,
quite frankly?
Do they do the desperation card, and not? I'm not going to say Big Brock or somebody like that, but do they? Sheamus, I would figure, is losing this Sunday. We're coming up at the pay-per-view. I would feel that he's probably going to lose his belt. They're going to go with a title change here. He's held that belt for quite a long time too, since WrestleMania. It's not a long time, and of course, what today's terms are. He's held the belt for a significant period of time, and I thought he's done a very good job with it. But I can see him losing the belt there, which makes it a little easier if you're going to do something stupid, I guess. I don't know what the right term is. I guess it would be cheap, because you're in the Hell in a Cell. It's not – obviously, you should only have one on a show every year, and that should be it. But they've gone to this having two of them. Can you get out of this cheaply? Do you think people will care if you get out of this with a Brock Lesnar interfering, or, I don't know, Big Show? I guess it wouldn't be Big Show. But
would Lesnar interfere?
Just purely because – the only reason
because
I would see him...
Because he happens to be wandering through the building with nothing better to do, which is is a lot of the crap they're writing anyway.
Well, I would figure Paul Heyman, you would obviously... Of course, this wouldn't be explained until Monday, so you pay, TNA style, you pay $50 just to see what the result is going to be, on the following Monday. But that would be the only one that would logically even half make sense, because he's the only one that's been aligned with Paul Heyman before, so that would be the only reason for that.
Well,
one, but...
okay, because of the alliance.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying I guess it would be some way
What's the name of this other clever team? Rock and Roll or Rock and Do Jobs or what is it?
Oh, what's the three-man band or whatever it is?
Yeah.
That's...
Here we go with another faction that'll last about 15 minutes. And what will they do? I mean, I don't know.
I don't. Yeah,
they've got a lot of guys that they have taken any type of that are in no position to draw them any money because of the way they've used them. I don't know. I did not see the show Monday. I just haven't had the time. I really haven't. I got in here late Monday night, and then yesterday, busy trying to catch up here since I've been on the road since last Thursday. But anyway, I don't know. I the numbers are down a little bit. I don't see. So I know somebody said, "Well, I think they're going to push Kofi to the top as a single. Good luck."
Oof.
I mean, again, no disrespect to that young man. He works hard. He's a good athlete, and all the above. But it's the way he's been positioned. Is he's not going to draw him a lot of money. You know, and I just, you know, whatever. But they're in that respect, they're in trouble. So I'm guessing you'll see a lot of goofiness and a lot of anger managements and silly melodrama with AJ and somebody. I don't know. You know, I that's the only way I can see right now that they can cover it, honestly. I mean,
did you did you get a chance to see the show? I think it was 2 weeks ago, or maybe it was 3 weeks ago now, or at least hear about it. It was the match on Raw that took place between Ryback and Matt Bloom, Tensai. I had kind of, you know, I remember it just killed me to see it when it happened, but obviously he got Tensai up for his move on SmackDown. He was not able to pull it off on Raw, and he screamed stupid at him a couple times, and I forgot to actually ask you about this. Now, you know, I at least I don't think I talked about it. Regardless of whether Bloom went up for him or not, or any of that sort of stuff, and again, I haven't heard any blame come on Tensai for this, so I just think it was Ryback's frustrations. But as a guy that's been in the wrestling business for about, you know, a minute, against a guy, you know, for Matt Bloom, who no matter what anybody can say about his character, he has paid his dues and he has done a lot of good work across the world. Obviously, you're trying to build behind that guy in Ryback, but what do you tell him on the way to the back? Or what were your feelings about that if you had heard about it? Because that, I wonder from your point of view, being in the business of a kid doing that, and obviously he may have been frustrated, but what do you do? Because if I'm Tensai, I go back and I punch him right in the face, but what do you do in a situation like that? Or what do you try to tell this kid?
First of all, to calm down. I didn't see it, so I'm not sure whether whether I'd say, yeah, well, you know, he didn't go up with him or he didn't try to go up with him. You know, sometimes, especially two guys that big, can get a jerky start. What I mean is they're not in sync, you know, and so just a half second difference of Tensai starting to go up when Ryback had started a half second before he get him up, then, you know, the balance is going to be bad. So I don't know if that's what happened. I don't, like I say, I didn't see it. You know, if you think it's intentional, I mean, you can start something, but where does it go?
Yeah.
You know? If one or the other guy, or the two guys, is not being professional, the people that it matters to see that or understand it anyway. You know, what the fans perceive, or a writer on some website, or you and I on this talk show, is not relevant. You know, if, you know, I mean, I don't know. Like I say, by not seeing it, I don't, fights get you nowhere. I mean, they honestly do not.
Well, I was just thinking about just in the aspect of, you know, you had Punk, obviously, there's, you know, talk about Punk getting in trouble, and I don't think he ever should have gotten in trouble for, hitting the fan. I mean, I understand why they would, but that was, to me, that was WWE's screw up, not CM Punk. I don't know what you expect out of a guy putting him in that position, but it did make me think about Ryback too, being in the position he's in after that. It, you know, it's interesting, I guess. Boy, 3 hours, and again, you missed nothing really on Monday night. You know, it's a painfully long show, and that's been beaten to death, because they're beating it to death. Once again, the third hour ends up being the drag. I guess I haven't seen the breakdowns of the ratings yet. People pointing to the Colognes match against Rhodes, Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow, who Sandow seems to be getting in that position a lot as far as having longer matches, and he obviously needs that. And I actually like that team because I'm a big Cody Rhodes guy as well, but obviously, you know, you just had the Colognes lose on Ryback's shoulders, both of them at the same time the week before, and you have Primo being like a drum for most of that match. What is the reason anyone would want to want to tune in and watch and see that. Well, you know, instead of seeing what's happening on football or otherwise, but it's, you know, I almost hate talking about Raw right now just because it is what it is.
Well, you know, in that respect, Mike, I did read or hear on one of the recaps, didn't Ziggler do a job Monday night again too?
Of course, and apparently from what the SmackDown spoiler tapings were, he loses again. Not only does he lose again, he tries to cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase, gets knocked out by Big Show at the end of the show. So, yeah, again, Ziggler in a different way reminds me of Drew McIntyre in this three-man band thing. All of this time, you could have been doing something to rehab the guy for whatever issues that they had with him. A lot of them, to me, are a joke. But for whatever issues you had, you could have been building him up, doing something with him in this time. And they didn't. They turned out with this. So, you know, again, once Ziggler finally gets this title, because sooner or later he will, no one's going to care.
Well, by the time he gets it, will it matter?
I'd be damned if it does. I'd be shocked if it does. And that's not an insult to Dolph Ziggler. It's just how...
Well,
you know,
I mean, it's not that belts in that particular company are, you know, have a lot of, you know, glitz and glamour attached to them any longer anyway. But with this guy just getting beat after, you know, can he overcome? I don't honestly, when I say can he overcome it, I mean, you know, is he capable of overcoming it? On top of probably poor writers that are going to, you know, do whatever once he, you know, if he gets it. You know, that there's something, too. Could they be building this thing to where here's the first guy that didn't even get the shot, never mind. I don't know. I just...
Well, yeah, Vince McMahon did that, you know, I guess, in part of his ranting.
And the other thing that, the other thing that caught my attention, too, was that Otunga came out and argued that he should get a title shot, and why? Because he's got a job? Because he's a Harvard graduate? I mean, you can't say because of my won and loss record. That's for damn sure.
Oh, yeah. Another guy, too, just to throw this in here. Ted DiBiase returned on SmackDown as well and ends up, you know, losing. And again, I don't know how the match went. We'll find out on Friday. But, you know, Ted DiBiase has been one of the guys that I would, you know, be careful with and build around. Obviously, they have not done that, and it's been a relative joke. But
how long has he been out, Mike? How long has he been out?
Oh, God, it's been at least 6 months, if not a little bit longer than that, because he was doing the DiBiase's posse thing. They had turned him baby face, but that seems like eons ago now. So I would say it was at least early spring, if not late, you know, it was late in the first quarter of the year.
See, here, okay, out of sight, out of mind sort of thing, right? I mean, when I say that, here's a guy legitimately got a rest. Now, I'm not saying that by bringing him back strong and putting him over, he's going to draw you big money by WrestleMania time or even draw you big money ever. But here's a chance to put some steam on somebody who... you know, you can say, wow, he's coming back with renewed vigor. Wow, he's, you know, he's better than when he, you know, and then give him some backstory, you know, that he trained with whoever, you know, while he was out, and his dad, you know, whatever, you know, and put some steam on the guy without beating him, for Christ's sake.
Well, that's it. I mean, actually, you take a peek and see who it was against, because, you know, I'm not sure if it was a major guy or not, but I'll check it out and see who it was, but he's a guy, too, that's like, why not have him over on Raw for right now, too, coming back, because Jim Ross is there. And I'll say this, if there's one redeeming, saving grace that comes with Raw being 3 hours is, if you want to try to pull one nugget out of there that's good, and this is very good, it's that you get to hear Jim Ross for 3 hours, actually explain things, and actually do little things, subtle things, and things with voice inflection, and just little facts here and there that make you actually want to care about what you're seeing. And if you don't care about what you're seeing, at least gives you some interest in it, what's, you know, somehow. And Ted DiBiase ended up being against Antonio Cesaro, which, let's hope that's a long match because I could see that.
By the way, Cesaro, did anyone run a poll to see if everyone thought his nipples were too big or not?
That was thankfully not one word was uttered about that this past Monday, and it goes away for good, I hope.
I thought that might be a hot topic. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Hey, I threw Brian all off on Sunday trying to move that over to Joe Park's nipples hooked up to a car battery for TNA, but that didn't go anywhere on Sunday, unfortunately. with Kofi, actually, because I think everybody likes Kofi. Everybody sees the athleticism. Everybody sees he's at least a guy that connects with the fans. Now, how he's been presented has not been very good. But he obviously, intentionally or not, and I guess I would put this on the Miz on Monday, threw that Trouble in Paradise kick, which Miz was not ready for. Obviously, it seems to be the spot, and Miz just didn't get his hand up for it, but just ate a kick right in the face. I guess as we speak right now, he is taking the IC title off of the Miz. Jim Ross did a really good job on Monday saying, you know, this kid has got it. You know, he's a great kid. He's a smart kid. He's a very athletic kid. He just needs that something. And they refer back to the Randy Orton match where he said that night in Madison Square Garden, he had it. And Jim Ross did a very good job getting that stuff across. What do you think right now? Obviously, WWE is going to do what they're going to do. But with a guy like Kofi, could this be a little bit of a renaissance for him? Is it possible it could be? Or do you think they're just going to do the whole, you know, pulling the rug out from underneath them, even though they need to hang on?
I don't think he's, the it factor, Mike, I don't know how to tell you what the it factor is. You know, he's personable. He's a nice kid. He's skinny. He's a good athlete. People like him. He's not going to draw you any money. Especially the way you programmed him now. I mean, you know, up to this point. I see him. I'll tell you, I've said this all along, and I'm using this as an example. But this is the kid that sets up, if they had a decent tag team division, here's the kid that sets up the hot tag for the seasoned veteran. You know, this is the good-looking kid that the heels get their heat on. He's the jumping around, highly athletic guy for the grizzled veteran who can't do that anymore because of physical limitations and years in the ring, or you know the story I'm telling you. And that's what I think. That's just where I see him. But see, that's the thing too. Our business, because it's not real, is so subjective. Right? I mean, in baseball, you either can play or you can't. It's not like, you know, there's a gray area there. But in this, our business, there is, you know. You could take three different writers or bookers or call them whatever you like, and they'll see the same person and see them three different ways. I mean, not the bookers, you know, back in the day wouldn't have utilized the guy different, you know, two of them use him different in different ways. But what I mean by this, now it's like, gee, he's got a great look. Has he got any talent? Well, no, but he's got a great look. You know, that's a key thing, is, you know, that sort of thing to these people. Or he fits my idea of the character that I have written down on paper. The problem is he may not personally fit it. His personality, the real him, may not fit it. But they don't ever give these kids a chance to find that out. You know, I mean, there's a lot of flaws in the way this thing is done, and obviously they're starting to show up more now. You know, due to the fact that they don't have, you know, the adequately seasoned, trained, talent to pick up the slack. I'll tell you an interesting thing. A young man wrote me a letter, an email. And, I haven't gone back to watch, but he said, you know, I think part of John Cena's elbow problems come from him taking his back bumps on his elbows. And I thought, yeah, okay. good. This guy's watching something other than the big, you know, big goofy spots. But, you know, there could be some credence to that, too. I've never paid that close attention to how Cena bumps, honestly. But, then I was looking back at this past weekend, and I caught a couple kids, you know, and it's not the first time I've ever seen it, you know, because I've had to break guys that have before. But maybe that's why your idol is unable to participate.
That's now we got about 4 minutes here before we take it to break and get Dr. Tom on. But as far as how everything went this weekend, as far as, you know, what were some of the good things you saw out of the guys, and what are the most, you know, the glaring things that, you know, as far as to a man where it seemed to be the biggest mental block, I guess, for them, or the things they were doing wrong.
Well, it's like, and I see this a lot on the indies, as far as a lot of kids, they see somebody do something or say something or you know, and they think, okay, that's cool, I'm going to do it. What they don't see is when that person did this particular thing, how they got to this particular spot, and then how they got away from it. You know, in other words, they don't see the whole picture. They just see the spot. Right? It's just like,
yeah.
I saw that Mercedes-Benz, and I want it. I've got to have it. I don't think that it costs $70,000, and I don't have $70,000, or what it'll cost to maintain it if I get it, you know, because of the type of car that it is. I just see the moment, and that's what these kids see a lot. So, you know, you have to break bad habits. It's like how to safely take a body slam. Several kids, you know, they didn't know how to distribute the weight properly, and nobody had ever called them on it. I mentioned two big guys. It's two young men named Calvin and Cyrus. No, I mean, from different parts of the country. The country, you know, different parts of the Southeast. The cool thing about these guys, Cyrus is 350 and Calvin is 325. In some of the drills I run, I have the guys do drop downs and leapfrogs. It's a cardio thing, but it's an agility drill as well. And I tell the guys, if you cannot leapfrog, then you shoot a clothesline and have the other guy duck clothesline. Anyway, I didn't specify you have to try. You know what you can do. But I was totally blown away when the guy, the 350 guy, was the first to get in the ring and go. I mean, during this drill. And he did the leapfrogs. I mean, his work ethic was phenomenal. He's relatively green to the business, trying to diet down, very serious about it. And the other guy, too. The other guy asked some very intelligent, and both these guys moved really well for their size. The 3 1/4 guy, they worked a match on Saturday night, and the 3 1/4 guy threw this, spinning kick, and this lady caught it on camera, on her camera, and froze it and showed it to us. My God, he was up high. So I was really impressed with that. I mean, everybody worked hard, and everybody was in different degrees of, experience. One of the things I noticed with a couple of the guys who've been around a while, they weren't smooth because, again, you know, they're just left to their own design a lot of times. But I thought it was very productive. They, you know, the kids seemed to think so. We had a good time, had a good rapport. And, I saw some, some kids with potential. Like a couple that I thought, geez, I wish I had someplace where I could work with these guys, consistently for some period of time. And there was one young man there that kind of resembled Cena, for Christ's sake. I mean, in build and look, I see some potential in him, but he's not smooth, you know. His stuff is herky-jerky, and he just needs somebody to work with him. And he may or may not get that, you know. That's the sad part.
Well, Les, before we go to break here, I always, want to ask you this just real quick. As far as showing up in shape, as far as these guys go, because we bring it up a lot on here,
as far as just, you know, overall, did you get too, you know, any dreamers in there? For the most part, did these kids come in, you know, in shape with the mindset that they were looking to get better?
Oh, yeah. Well, they all wanted to get better. As far as you're talking about cardio conditioning, there were some in shape and some that realized real quick that they weren't in shape. This one drill, it's called the triple five, and there's no way to explain it to you over the phone. I mean, you almost have to see it. I run it. A lot of schools use it now. A lot of kids, after they try it, they like it. But the truth is, if you run this drill, two guys run this drill smoothly, it takes less than 2 minutes. And I tell them this before we start, and I said, here's the bad news is some of you won't finish it. Some of you will gas out before that, before you're done with it. But that's the point. That's your wake-up call. You know. But like I say, like the bigger 350-pound guy, he was gassed, but he kept going. And that's part of it, too, Mike, seeing what kind of heart these kids have got, you know. I have no problem with somebody someone failing to do something. I have a problem with them not trying, you know, or not giving it a full effort. I'll tell you the truth. I'm, you know, you can be the worst guy in the whole camp, but if I see you're really trying hard, man, you've got my attention. You can be the best guy there, and if you've got an attitude, I don't have 5 minutes for you. That's not part of the game, that attitude. So, but yeah, it was, like I say, these big guys impressed me so much because of their agility for their size. And I mean, it wasn't solid weight. They both could stand, they're both big frame guys, but they could still both stand to drop 50, 60, 70 pounds, you know, and get that shoulder to waist taper. And they still would look big because they have big frames. They're going to look bigger than they really will be. But as I said to both of them, just think, you know, you're agile now for your size. How much would that help your agility, you know, to dump that kind of weight?
Well, Les, let me throw it to break here, and we'll get Dr. Tom Pritchard on the show. And, of course, you know, these breaks are headed up by Terry and Peterman, attorneys at law, our good friends there. And after we come back.
We get our boss out of his DUIs all the time, right?
Yeah. great personal injury attorneys they are, as well as other things too. But you'll hear their commercial coming up here. And after those commercials, you're going to hear Dr. Tom Pritchard here on Ringside Rap.
Hey, how you doing? This is Joe Walsh. I'm speaking on behalf of Rad. It's okay to rock and roll, right? But don't drive home drunk. But if you're drunk, call me up. I have a limo. I'll come and get you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Would you like to know which teacher your kids are most likely to choose as a role model this year in school? Hey, I'm Joe Bonzo with the Oak Ridge Boys, and I can tell you, it's the person who teaches them about music, not sports or English or history, music. Surprised? Well, you shouldn't be. Music teachers have always played an important role in the lives of their students. It did with me. They help our kids tap into their natural creativity. They teach them about cooperation and self-discipline. It's a bonus that when kids have learned about scales and clefs, they find math and English concepts easier to grasp. That's because of how music education expands a young person's spatial IQ. Reading poetry or solving an equation is easier if kids know their sharps and flats. Help your kids get to know the music teacher at their school. Get them involved in music this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement. Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know they're probably just a little bit nervous. You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life. Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi. Until about 9 o'clock or so, where a better relief pitcher than anybody on the Washington Nationals had will step in. Charleston Post and Courier's Mike Mooneyham is going to step in here as well. And I'd like to bring on again, coming out a couple weeks ago, and he's back to join us this evening, Dr. Tom Pritchard. And Dr. Tom, how are you, sir?
Gentlemen, I am doing great. The question I have for you is, how are you guys doing? I sat here, I was catching part of the show, and Les, man, you sound like, I don't know, your dog or your cat ran away or something. I mean, you're not sounding like very upbeat this evening. Am I reading this wrong, or what's going on?
You got to do a show with me. How happy would he be?
If I were happy, it would have to be 1965. No, I
got to tell
I'm
you something, guys.
I've had
really
a long weekend,
I've
had a real bad chest cold, but I'm
well,
happy
that too,
you're...
But also, I really have to feel kind of what you were... I have to feel how you're feeling, actually, listening to you. It's one of those things where I heard you discussing... off and on Kofi and some of the things that happened last week as well, or pardon me, just this past Monday, last week, or whatever it was these last 3 hours, and you, I got to see the show late too, but I got to tell you guys, it's been that way for so long that it really is kind of one of those things where you almost feel that despair of just throwing up your hands and going, well, now what? I mean, what's there to be excited about? And by the time that guy's time comes around, has it really passed him by, or will it come around? I mean, golly, man, when Kofi first came on the scene and they put him in with Orton, thought they were going to put a rocket ship on him, but lo and behold, as you very well know, Les, when you put a little too many writers in the mix, it gets a little convoluted. And so, anyway,
yes.
I was just listening to a little bit of the show so far, and I kind of thought, well, you guys are feeling a little bit on the same lines that I'm feeling with. I feel like I've been hit by a truck, as well as that business is just getting a little bit stagnant, in my opinion.
You remember when we first met Kofi? He came down with that group of kids from Boston to do the weekend camp in North Carolina.
Yes. What a personality! What a great kid!
Yeah.
What a great attitude! But I have to say, if you don't hit when it's hot, and I agree 100%. You know, you got to make it when it's right. You can't let those guys sit on the burner too long. I agree. And there was a time when I thought there was a time for Kofi, but you're right. Sometimes that time passes, and I don't know if you can get it back. But yeah, when the kid came down, what a great attitude! What a great look! What a great person to have on your team. But is he the guy to carry the company? I don't know. You know, I kind of felt like you were saying just a minute ago. It was like, I don't know. And then I felt
you know, I was trying to say, Mike was. I said to Mike, I said, you can feel it. You can see it as a trainer. I can feel it and see it, but you can't define it, right? I mean,
right.
You can watch a kid walk. You can watch him perform, and he's got it. Or you can still see a good athlete who's a nice kid who works hard and tries hard, but he just doesn't matter because he's not going to draw it because he just doesn't have it, right?
Yeah, you're correct. You're 100% right. And there's another, I think, a classic example of people, one of the guys that people really wanted to see prosper and do well, and some people saw it in this kid, was Jack Swagger. I love Jake Hager to death, but I'm sorry, since he got there, he really has gone the other way for me. So, there's a lot of guys right now I'm looking at the same way, Les, where I just say, gosh, man, you know, I don't see it, but somebody else is seeing something. And whatever they're seeing, they need to pass it over my way, and I'm not allowed to do that anymore. So, anyway, you know, it's just, it's so
or share the drugs they're using.
I ask myself, I'm trying to write a book, and I know you know how that can be really daunting. I asked myself, where did my wrestling go? Why can't you put on some good wrestling? Because good wrestling is entertaining. That's what got me hooked. That's what got you hooked. That's why we all wanted to do this, because you saw great workers, performers, wrestlers, people, men, women. Not so much the women, as I got to tell you, because I wasn't a big fan of women wrestling until once I got in the business and I saw what they went through and how hard they worked, too. But I've got to say, the guys that I watched in Texas growing up, they had pride in their work, and they went out there, and they made you a fan. If you watched it, even people who weren't fans, they would watch guys like Jack Briscoe, the guys like Dory Funk Jr., Harley Race, Terry Funk. They would watch, and they could get into it because they were that good at what they did. And today, I think, God, how did I get on this? But anyway, let me finish my thought.
Well, somebody puts a soapbox out there, you just climbed up.
Cable TV,
that's how that works. Hey, a kid that you and I both like a lot was at the camp I did this weekend, Kyle Matthews. And Kyle
yes.
told a kid, you would have loved it. He said, talking about watching older matches, you know. And he said, go on YouTube and find Lorenzo Parenti and Pat O'Connor. It's either St. Louis or Kansas City. He said, it's a babyface match. But what do you see how the crowd gets into that? I want to see
yeah.
it. I haven't
yeah.
seen it.
And the guy probably said, Lorenzo who?
And Pat who? Right.
Yeah, exactly. And we, another match that was constantly, well, even we still said it, even though we weren't supposed to, was Benoit and Regal at the
yes.
Memorial. You know, of course, that became a dirty word after after what happened. But I don't care what you say. It was matches like that that those kids need to watch just to learn the charisma, just to learn the timing, to learn the realism, to learn that. I heard you say, make a statement earlier, that even though our business isn't real, you know, baseball, you either hit the ball or you don't. Well, our business is more real than anyone really knows. And I know what you meant when you said that, but that's what a lot of these kids think. Pardon me. And that's what a lot of these kids come with the premise of, oh, well, this isn't real. Anybody can do it. No, not just anybody can do it, and that's the difference. If you go into this, in my opinion, and not believing it and not at one time in your life having to believe it or seeing someone that you saw, and as you're watching that match, you got lost in the fact that, pardon me, that what those guys are doing is real, then I don't know how you can make that feeling happen for someone else. In other words, people want to get lost in your matches. They don't want to watch a match and say, oh, they're working, they're not really wrestling. Well, even though they might, the genie's out of the bottle, we've told everyone it's entertainment, and it's predetermined whether it is or isn't. People know good work, hard work, good wrestling, bad wrestling, a good performance from a horrible one. And I think that that's what a lot of these kids and a lot of these people come into this business today, this sport today, thinking, oh, because it's not real, I can just do it. I can learn it. They'll just teach us everything. There's some things that you just can't teach. You have to have an instinct. You have to know what it's like. And I think that's a huge element still missing. So.
Well, I think what's most disappointing about that, too, for longtime fans and for viewers who are into it on the level that, say, I am, is they know this. The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels matches over the last couple of years, and obviously Undertaker and Triple H as well, you know, they got you involved. They got you invested, whether you're watching it at home or whether you're one of the 70,000 people there. They knew what to do and how to get there, and it gets frustrating because are they passing this on? Do they want to pass this on? Is anybody paying it? They need to drive that type of stuff home. And I think that's where it becomes really frustrating for someone like me. I'm a big Japanese fan, and I'm hearing the rave reviews over this Hiroshi Tanahashi Minoru Suzuki match that a lot of people have talked about from October 8th, which is available on YouTube. And it is a great match. Now, I know Dave Meltzer lost his mind for it, I think, because he just saw a good wrestling match. It wasn't the greatest match ever or anything like that, but it was a good half-hour throwback on what a professional wrestling match is supposed to be and getting you invested, even though you don't know the language. And it just seems to be so simple, and it's very frustrating as a fan when you watch this and go, I want to be involved in this. I want to be invested in this. And they seem to not do it, and they just get caught in that trap. And that's, you know, Vince McMahon, according to make this decree of, well, this starts from the top. Well, if it starts from the top, this better start trickling down soon because you're in trouble.
I got to tell you, even without a job, I'm busier now more than ever. Because when I watch this, when I watch WWE, when I watch any type of wrestling these days, but let's just start with the WWE, aka Sports Entertainment. Number one. The agent / producers, whoever sets up the match, is going to carry the marching orders to the guys in the match. Then it's up to that agent and that producer to sit down with those guys. And, gosh, this is a killer part. The best part is when you have two pros who just say, here's the premise, here's what we're going to do. I can't tell you move for move because that's not how we work. Unfortunately, on TV, you need to know where some things are going to be. We all get that. But what's not being passed down because it's not really that applicable anymore in the eyes of, I think, the corporate world or a three-hour show on USA is the fact that you have never seen a Johnny Valentine versus Wahoo McDaniel match, and gosh, I know that's dated. You've never seen a Whitey Caldwell, let me use a Tennessee reference here, a guy who last, what, was 5'8", maybe a 180 at his heaviest.
Right.
But a hero nonetheless, who got people involved, and it was a different time, a different era. My point being this real quick, I'm going to try and shorten it up, is when you have The Undertaker and you have Shawn Michaels or you have a Triple H, those guys are pretty much retired in their best days in the ring or behind them. Not to say that they still couldn't go in and perform, but the point is, once again, they saw guys who got them interested and got their passion revved up as kids as well. That's where that came from. The kids today, you have to remember, we're coming up on WrestleMania 29. Okay, so if you're 30 years old, all you know is WrestleMania. So you don't understand there was wrestling before John Cena. I used to say people didn't understand there was wrestling before Hulk Hogan. And a lot of them still don't understand that. They still don't get there used to be territories. And I understand that because no one cares enough to get into the history of the business. No one these days, I don't want to blanket statement everyone, but the majority of kids that I've seen before didn't have enough willing, or I don't know what you'd call it, enough, I don't know if they cared enough, let me say that, to go
desire,
back in history.
Desire.
Desire, thank you. To go back in history and find out who came before them and what they did, because they might find out that, you know, Vern Gagne, in his younger days, was a pretty damn good worker. I actually had the chance to see some black and white videotape from the Garden. But real quick, and I know you contributed to this book too, Les, but the Heroes and Icons book just came out. Are you guys aware of this?
I just got it in the mail 2 days ago. I cannot wait to read it. Like Mike Mooneyham, you throw him in there too, because he contributed to that as well.
Yeah,
he's supposed to give me a
Mike's
copy
book.
When he's listening. He's going to be on here later. He owes me one. All right, go
exactly.
ahead.
So, Rick, exactly, and he does owe you one. And number one, should we spoil who number one is? You think it would matter? But the number one hero and icon they put in this book, the kids of today are going to go, what, who? And it's so – I was intrigued with Jack Pfeffer. For a couple reasons. Number one, he broke Paul Bosch into the business, who helped break me into the business. But no one would know who Jack Pfeffer is today, the kids. No one would know who Pinky George was today. No one would even, I mean, Sam Munchnick, Eddie Graham, some of these names, Les Thatcher, Dennis Hall, Roger Kirby, come on. All of these guys were pertinent and relevant to the business and still are, if they cared enough to find out what they've done and where they've been. And that's why I'm so intrigued by this book. I've been looking at it, and I found myself getting lost in it because some of the stuff in here I knew, and some of it obviously I didn't. But it's just to read about these guys and the path they followed, whether it's true or not, the fact that it's written down in this form and gives you some kind of outline to go by, these guys would do them a world of good to just look at it and see how they made their way in the business. A guy like Luthes, a guy like Strangler Lewis, Eddie Graham, Wahoo McDaniel, Cowboy Bill Watts. You know, it's incredible the amount of information available out there to these guys, and it's also just as incredible that they don't care enough to find it, to me.
Dr. Tom, one thing we didn't really get a chance to talk with you last time you were on was you really in the business and breaking in. We talked about a lot of different things, but we didn't talk about...
What was that
laugh
for, Les?
I'm laughing because Rich is in his ear. I was about to say, we've gotten off script here. But, of course, I've never been on a script in 52 years, and I'm not on one tonight, Rich, by the way. So go ahead, Mike. Score your brownie points with the boss.
Well, I see, we can't talk about too much because we want people to buy the book. But we didn't get a chance to really talk last time around about you breaking up Paul Bosch and going to Los Angeles, or really how you really got into this and started up into this hot and happy. So I think now would be a fine time. You know, how did you approach Bosch, and how did that all work out as far as, you know, stepping up and being able to be broken in?
Yeah, well, first of all, Les and I think both can relate to knowing about the brownie points with the boss, because I don't think we were very good at that either, obviously. I'm trying, Les. I really was. I'm trying so hard. My job last time was to keep my job, and I didn't do too well with that. I can relate to that. So, real quick, I mean, I've been a wrestling fan my whole life, and my older brother Ken was about the only guy in my family. First of all, let me just back up. I growing up in West Texas, I had the best of both worlds because I was born in El Paso, got to watch the Funks, the Infernos, the Von Bronners, J.C. Dykes, Saul Weingroff, Pat Patterson, Harley Race at a young age, Grizzly Smith. I mean, all these great workers. And then at 10 years old, I moved to Houston, Texas. And while the live wrestling events were on Monday nights at the Coliseum in El Paso, the TV show would be bicycled throughout the territory and would be shown Saturday afternoons at 4. Then we moved in 1969 to Houston. So Paul Bosch ran Houston Wrestling, and this was on a UHF station. Gosh, UHF. Anybody know what that means these days?
Yes.
A UHF station, and barely able to find it and tune it in. You know, you had these things called an antenna out there, and you had to fix it just right. And, you know, it would come on at Saturday nights and at about 10:30 at night and go for 90 minutes in the Sunday afternoon, or Sunday morning, pardon me. The same show would play. Well, the live event was on a Friday night, so the tickets were cheap. My dad had a better job, and my mom got to take us to the matches every week then. One day I'm walking home from school. My older brother Ken is responsible for calling Paul Bosch one day and said, listen, you know, my little brother wants to be a wrestler. He's taking pictures for magazines. He wants to take pictures, and he just wants to get in. Is there any way you could meet with him and just give him an opportunity to take pictures? I was taking pictures, sending stuff in to Koichi Yashizawa with Gong Magazine and Norm Keiter, Jim Melby with Wrestling Review, Wrestling Monthly, and just doing anything I could to get my foot in the door. And so Paul said, of course, bring him down. Yeah, so my brother Ken picked me up, took me down to the office at 2022 Sanchez Center with the corner of Gray. I always remember that because that was back in the old days. Once again, Les, you understand how the promoters would hammer that address in.
Yes.
And you had to hammer it, and that was your job, too. After your wrestling days, I could never do that, man, but you guys knew how to just hit your cues, hit your marks, and that was another thing that I fell a little short on. Anyway, I met Paul, got to take pictures of Jack Briscoe versus Wahoo that Friday night. I was nervous as hell. You know, Paul took me back in his office that afternoon, and I explained to him I had this press pass that Norm Keiter had sent me, some card that said I was an official representative of Wrestling Monthly, which didn't mean anything at all, but, you know, Paul let me do it. Let me take pictures ringside. And it happened eventually that my pictures got published in a Japanese magazine. I showed Paul. I didn't do it every week, and I didn't do it for every match. I just asked him on occasion for the big matches. I didn't want to overdo it and overstep my bounds. But I eventually got to take more and more pictures, and Gino Hernandez was also around at that time. He was a teenager. And they used to have seconds come to the ring with the guys, take the jackets back. And Gino would become a second, you know, as he got older. And once Gino started wrestling, I'll never forget this, I called Paul and asked him, I said, if there ever comes an opportunity, to be a second, I'd like to have the chance. Now that Geno's wrestling, and if Tommy Fouché or Pat Hatchell ever wants a night off, so that came that day that Tommy Fouché was going down to Florida, and Paul asked me if I'd like to be a second next week. So I thought that meant, well, yeah, now I get to go in the dressing room and I'm a part of the clique. No, what that meant was I was allowed to walk to the ring and take the jackets back, and it was just, you know, I still got to hand the jackets to the guys in the dressing room and walk right back out again. I didn't want to overstep my boundaries, but eventually, week after week, I kept telling Paul I wanted to wrestle, and there came a weekend where Paul was moving from 2022 San Jacinto at the corner of Greta, 1919 Caroline at the corner of Pierce. You know, Paul wanted to make sure you knew where the corners were, so if you're downtown Houston, really. Gosh. Anyway, so that weekend I helped Paul, Nick Kozak, Tiger Conway Jr., Sr., Junior Hernandez, a bunch of people move. Well, not a bunch of people, but, you know, people that Paul had asked to help move all this, you know, classic legendary stuff, you know, statues and pictures that he had in his office from one to the other. It was a bigger office. So we moved it, got it all set up. I came a couple weekends afterwards also to help Paul, you know, now I'm with, you know, having a relationship with this guy, being able to be there, put the pictures on the wall, and be a part of something that I thought was really, really cool. To me, I was like, wow, this was a big step. And I still kept going to the matches, still kept taking pictures, still kept being a second occasionally. And my brother, Ken, one more time, had got me a job selling shoes at Montgomery Ward's. I hated it. And 2 weeks into it, I'm down at the office talking to the ladies about this horrible job I have, and Paul had walked out of his office and said, well, if you hate it that bad, how would you like to work here? And I couldn't believe my ears. This was during the summer, actually, too. So for $75 a week, I got to work at the Houston Wrestling office during my summer. It had to be 75 because I just started driving, and I would mow the grass, I would run errands, sell tickets, and eventually from there I became Paul's assistant on Friday nights, which meant assistant director. I set up the run sheet, would tell you what commercial's next. If Paul needed something, I would run back and tell the guys. Again, he was very kayfabe to a point, but I think he knew I was figuring things out without being overly butting in, if you know what I mean. You know, I kept my distance, but I wanted to know. And I could tell when Paul was doing things. I didn't ask, I just watched. And eventually, one more time, it just came down to, I was working out at a gym where Mark Lewin was at. I met Mark, and he remembered me from Friday night, and we started working out together as well. And Mark Lewin was one of my mentors, Les, so you can tell where that came from.
Cool.
What I, you know what I mean? I didn't want to overstep my boundaries with him either, so I didn't really try and talk. I didn't talk too much about the business with Mark. I let him talk about it, and I lifted with him, and it was Paul's assistant. And then once I graduated high school, Paul allowed me to come on full time and work in the office. Now this is where when Gary Hart would come in for booking meetings on Friday night, he brought the Iron Sheik, who was wrestling as Muhammad Farouk at this time. There was a football player in town who thought he wanted to be a wrestler, and of course Gary brought Cosro with him one Friday, and Paul told me if I wanted to go down the Coliseum and work out with him, I could in the Friday afternoons before the show. So of course here I am. That's all I needed. I went down with the Iron Sheik and this football player who I couldn't tell you his name to save my life right now, but I thought we're going to learn how to work. Well, Of course, Cosro had other ideas. He's in his Olympic singlet and his Olympic wrestling shoes, and I'm looking at this going, I don't know about this. And he proceeded to stretch the living hell out of me and this guy. I went to lock up with Sheik and slapped him in the ear, and he slapped the piss out of me just to show me that he could, and I wasn't going to do anything about it. But for 2 months, I went down to the Coliseum in the afternoons with the Sheik. This guy dropped out after 2 weeks, but the Cosro, I think, enjoyed stretching the living crap out of me. And from there, Cosro left the territory. It went to Nick Kozak and Joe Mercer. Joe Pizza, I'm not sure if you ever met him, Les, or not. Joe Pizza was around.
No, you know, I never met him. I've heard that name so many years, and no, we never met.
Okay. Well, he had a record service, he and Nick, and at this time, King Parsons was also training. And that's once Cosro left, I would go down to Nick and Joe's record service, and King Parsons was would drive his dump truck. He would come straight from work, drive his dump. He drove a dump truck for a construction company in Houston. And we would go into the ring with all this grease and grime and dirt and everything around. It was the greatest thing in the world to be able to go down there and just get in the ring with Nick, you know, King. And there were a couple other local guys hanging around, not the Gary Young from Dallas, but another guy named Gary Young. And there was Sammy Jones, some of the guys, just local Houston guys that didn't really know the term outlaw at that time, but they were just some outlaws that were running around there. So that's pretty much how it happened. Then eventually Ernie Holmes, football player. Ernie Shavers, the boxer, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Holmes wrestled for a while, the old ex-Steeler.
Yeah, but the ex-Steeler, thank you. He died in a car wreck, though, not too many years ago. He was on a main event in Bryan, Texas, that Joe and Nick were going to run, and I asked Paul if I could do it, and he says, by all means, go right ahead. And I wrestled El Satanico number two. Number one wasn't available that night. I think his wife had to work, and he had to watch the babies. So El Satanico was one of Joe's record drivers, and of course he put on a mask, and he just beat the living hell out of me. But they put me over my first match, which I thought, wow, I won my first match. Well, really, that didn't mean a whole lot, as you all know. And I think I got paid $12, but I was so happy because now I had my first match. And from there, Boyd Pierce got me booked around that area, and here's the funny thing, and I'll try to make it short. Paul had me booked in Portland to go to, with Don Owen in 1980, but Gary Hart came to me and said, I have you booked in Los Angeles, and I told him about Portland, and Gary said, yeah, but you go to L.A. first, and then you go to Portland. So I got to L.A., and come to find out, Al Madrill and I were such a great team that we won the America's Tag Team Championship, you know? And I asked Chavo when I was going to go to Portland, and he said, you're not going to Portland, you're staying here. You know, working 3 days a week, and well, okay, maybe 4 days. But the houses were horrible, and little did I realize then, but, you know, young talent, you give them a belt and no money, and Mike. Yes, exactly. You'd be surprised how happy we are, or how I was. So here I am, the America's Tag Team Champion with Al Madrill and blah, 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 blah. But it was a great experience. I cannot knock Los Angeles. I wrestled in the Olympic Auditorium, worked with Red Shoes, you know, Johnny Red Shoes Dugan, met Freddie Blassie, worked with John Tolis. I mean, it was, you know, it was a classic place. It's just, you know, it was really down. Business was down. But I would not trade that experience for anything in the world. So, long story, even longer. I was very fortunate at a young age. I owe it to my brother Ken. I still go to him for advice, but I owe it to him getting me the meeting with Paul Bosch in his office. and just having confidence in me because no one really did. Everyone told me, you know, you're too small. Paul kept trying to discourage me, and you know, I on my blog right now, I have one day I'm sitting at the office, and I'm on the phone selling tickets, and Paul comes in and puts something in front of me, and I look at it, and it's a wrestling license, and it's Paul's license. It's actually on my website, drtompritchard.com. Just check it out. It says to Tom Pritchard, this is my last wrestling license. Save it along with your first. And I thought, oh, my God, that's pretty cool. So October 20th next week will mark the 33rd year in the business that when I have my first match. So, you know, it's just I was very fortunate because Houston was I didn't understand. I thought everybody had their own town. I didn't realize it was a whole territory. But Paul had his own town. He was civic minded. He was involved. You know, all the promoters were back then. That was the deal. You know, you had to stay in good with the local community if you wanted to promote and you know have people come out and on your side, I guess. But that's pretty much how it was. I started out a wrestling fan. I would study and read anything I could. And once I started, man, I was always afraid to say the wrong thing. I never wanted to get fired. I had respect for everybody that came before me. I always wanted. I was a student of the game. I just never really pushed for me. I was just happy to be there. You know what I mean? And these days, you have to. You know, I've heard it so many times, and it's so true. And I think it's been true since the beginning of time. If you're going to be on top, you better be able to walk over, on, and through anybody in your way. Whether it's your mother, your grandmother, your dog, your cat, uncle, dad, mom, it doesn't matter. You know, if you want to be the guy, people say, you know, you have to do whatever it takes. Well, sometimes whatever it takes isn't the most pleasant thing in the world. But I was very fortunate to be around some good people, and Paul Bosch, I was very fortunate that he gave me the opportunity to work in the office, to be you know, have contact with the people I had contact with, and you know, the rest was, man, it was really a cool ride. So, and I don't think the ride's over yet. I'm still riding. I'm just not. I think I'm in the Les Thatcher mode right now, in the sense that you know, you question all this stuff, and when I say Les Thatcher mode, I mean that with all respect and sincerity, because you just shake your head sometimes. And I think we've had these discussions quite a few times. Just asking yourself, what in the hell are they doing? Because I just remember good wrestling being good wrestling. And if you told a good story, people are going to watch it, and people are going to listen and see and come out. So that's what I remember growing up in the business, and that's what I was around. And I didn't realize how fortunate I really was until I got in the business and started seeing other promoters operate as opposed to Paul Bosch, because Paul operated one way, Sam Muchnick operated pretty much, I think, almost in unison with Paul the same way. And then you had your Nick Gulases and things like that, who I never had the opportunity to work for, but, you know, so I can't say anything bad about the guy. I just heard Nick wasn't, Nick was Nick, is what I understand.
Well, Nick was Nick. Let me tell you, I worked for him. Yes. You know, I never met Paul. I talked to him on the phone when I was in the Crockett office. Seemed like a really nice guy.
Well, John, before you answer that, I know this is going to devastate your feelings and the fact that I'm going to exit the line right now. I know that that's going to be a crushing thing, but it should make you happy that a real professional is going to step in right now for the Charleston Post-Courier. Mike Mooneyham, and both of you can jump on him about not getting you the book sent. But, Mike, I want to thank you very much for jumping in here for me, and I really appreciate it. And, gentlemen, I appreciate all of you, and I'll talk to you all next week.
All right, okay, Mike.
Well, thanks, Mike. Good talking to you, too. And the other Mike, I hope I didn't say any. I knew you were supposed to leave it at 9 anyway, so, yeah. But
that's
welcome,
all right.
Mike.
We have
hey,
a lot of
goodbye,
mics.
Mike.
Hey, Mike, thanks for the hot tag. I appreciate that.
Problem. That was pretty cold and just drizzling anyway. Yeah, so.
Well, Moodyham, let me ask a question.
Hey, guys.
If you're on here with us, what's Facebook doing without you?
I don't know. That is a very good question, Les.
You, my friend, does your newspaper pay you to be on there?
Well, they do want me to be active on Facebook and Twitter. It's sort of the social media thing now.
Let me just say this real quick, because I was so anti-social media, and my wife is so great. She's the one who talked me into getting on Facebook. And you're right, man. I mean, you have to be out there. It's so do you have Facebook, Les?
Yeah, I sure do. That's how I know you're on it all the time.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
you've tagged me with a couple.
I just went to this convention and everybody's on it, and I got some contacts through Facebook. But I read your columns too, Mike. Just so you know, so let's play, this is a get over fest now, right? Let's put everybody over. you have to stay active. You have or not active. You have to stay out there, irrelevant, I guess.
Yeah.
And Twitter, Facebook, all this stuff, which.
Yeah.
There's another element that I didn't have growing up, and Les didn't have, I guess, growing up in the business. But it's a part of it. So you either embrace it or you get kind of left out in the cold, I guess. So
you're right, Tom.
That's the way it was explained to me. So I'm trying my best to.
Yeah,
to
and you know, I'm a few years older than you, and I sort of.
I don't know. You don't think you're that much older than me?
I think probably 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
Probably,
Let's
I think I'm 18 years younger than Les, so that's about right.
Well,
I've got a birthday
so.
Coming up here in 11 days, kids.
How old are you?
72.
Oh, no, you're not. I'm 38.
Yes, I am.
I was just joking.
Anyway,
about
go ahead.
20-something. But anyway, I sort of had a hard time adapting because I'm sort of an old school guy. But once I actually did it, and Les, you know this, I think we have a lot of fun on Facebook. I mean, it's a way to connect. It's a way to keep up with a lot of your buddies and friends in the business. And it's a pretty good vehicle. And I started Twitter probably 4 or 5 months ago. And I don't like Twitter as much as Facebook because you have to keep everything short and pithy. But it's just another way to, like Tom said, to stay relevant.
Yeah, and I if you're not on there, I mean, I've looked at it too, but it is something like once again, I tried this website and trying to do a blog, and I haven't had time since I got back either to update my blog, but I was trying to do it to get this. Curriculum out, a T-shirt out, and try and do some merchandising thing.
Yeah.
It's just, it's such a I don't want to say a mess, but it's just it's a lot of work to stay relevant.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
And Mike, I do see your tweets, and I do try and read your articles. The newspapers are almost extinct. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, it's fortunately our paper has. We're privately owned. We've been around. We're one of the oldest newspapers in the South, and so that's helped. We're not owned by any big corporate chain. But, the newspaper business has been hurting for a while, and with the economic downturn, you know, we've got a lot fewer folks here working, and it's we're doing more jobs than ever before, and, we're wearing a lot of different hats, and my pro wrestling column has been around since, I think 1988, 24 years or so, and it's the oldest wrestling column run by a daily newspaper in existence. But, it took on much larger proportions as it went on, and, it became sort of a 24/7 job for me in addition to everything else I do. So, now we have all the social media and radio shows and this and that, and it's become quite time-consuming, to say the very
least.
Well,
you know, if you guys want anybody to, like, you know, go to birthday parties or just be the life of the party, too, I'm available to suck all the air out of that, too. So, hey, I'm sorry, guys. I know, Les, you're doing all these I don't know how many radio shows a week also, but I was talking to Hurricane Helms, Shane Helms, this past weekend as well. He does a blog radio, a video, iTunes and all that stuff. I mean, it's just, that wasn't around when, you know,
no.
Again, the old timers even before me.
You could put your own show on, America's Got Talent. They take contestants from YouTube now.
I actually did that. And that's the same thing with what WWE has done on their website. They've actually have it where it's a recruitment part on the website, which is it's good and bad. Don't get me going on that. But the point is, you know, people can send in their submissions to, you know, well, here's what I do. What do you think? And when I saw some of them, I thought this is just opening an even bigger can of worms, which it has. But again, look at America's Got Talent. Look at shows like The Voice. Look at shows like that where, you know, you're finding talent out there that there was no other vehicle, and it's just kind of carried over. I think in every aspect of life, you know, we're instant news, instant. And as I said before, instant gratification. If you don't like this show, there's something else on. You don't like that? You have your, Netflix, whatever. I don't want to plug anybody here. But, I mean, just anything you want, 24/7 is available. And that's another reason I look at professional wrestling today. And honest to goodness, I know there's maybe – I know, Mike, you probably watch MMA less. I'm not sure if you're a big fan or not. But
I am.
I haven't watched too many fights. I know a few of the guys, but I really people have said that's, you know, what our business used to be. I'm not so sure it is because I really haven't seen it. But at the same time, if it is, then why don't I know more about it? You know, than I do, I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I know. I feel that same way, Tom. I never really fully embraced MMA. I know a little bit about it. I watch a few shows. But I don't really see that as pro wrestling as we knew it.
I think when people say it's like our business used to be, what they mean in the context of it, that it's more
believable?
About the struggle, right?
Yeah.
More about winner and loser.
Right.
And it's more bare bones. I mean, now, course, they have music and everything, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's what they mean by it.
Even with the bare bones, though, I think that, you know, when I would watch, let's just say, a couple guys that both of us are all three of us would know, if I would watch Harley Race versus Wahoo McDaniel, that's bare bones. I mean, those guys, while they're working, they're working damn hard, and I believed everything they did in the ring. So Johnny Valentine and Wahoo McDaniel or Harley Race. I mean, I don't see that as much. The last match I saw like that was Brock versus Cena.
Yeah.
As close as it came, and because people weren't sure, and even when you're sure, you're not sure until you get in there, and that's kind of how I felt about it. And once again, we go back to the element of why are we so and feeling like so what? And did this guy's has this time this guy's time passed or not? It's because there's nobody really capturing my, let me speak for myself. There's nobody really capturing my imagination as far as, you know, there's an element of danger here that this guy could veer off the tracks at any time.
Right.
And with Brock Lesnar, I feel Brock can veer off the tracks at any time, even though I know and you know that he's a businessman. There's that element of Brock that seeps through the television when I watch him. And I say to myself, I know he's business, but at the same time, he's a guy that doesn't really care when it comes right down to it. And in that split second, if he feels like go ahead and be Brock and let it rip, there's nothing you can do about it. And that's what I like. Not that he would. It's just the fact that he could is what I like. And
I remember back before I got in the business when the Bruiser, because he was so unusual and so fresh, got hot here on television, that people that normally wouldn't talk about wrestling or go to wrestling would at least go once to see the Bruiser, or at least were talking about it. And then you can talk about remembering the feeling or the atmosphere of so-and-so getting hot in a different, you know, you can go all the way up to Steve Austin. When the Stone Cold thing hit, it kicked you in the ass, right? I mean, and there is nobody there. I mean, okay, Cena's over, but I don't get that feeling from John. I don't mean that disrespectfully, it's a show. I mean, and I think in part, you guys may not agree with me, but part of it is what the in-ring portion, good, bad, or indifferent, is surrounded with so much gaga that it makes it harder, even if you're a great performer, to get the people's attention and hold it. But yet for these kids who don't have that kind of experience, they don't know how to do that, and I think that's part of the problem.
There's no point of reference, and I don't know if which genre or which business WWE wants to be in at what time. That's the whole problem to me, I think, is, and once again, it's great, I think, to have your hands in as much as possible to make as much money as possible. That's obviously the name of the game, and they know better than I do because they're where they're at, and I'm where I'm at. But the point is, what's wrong with wrestling? Why can't you be a wrestling company? It's because you want to be an entertainment company. Okay, I get all that. But then you can't be spread as thin. In other words, concentrate on the wrestling and don't be so spread out, I guess is what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm seeing. You know, it's great that the company is going to help sponsor a pay-per-view with the Rolling Stones. Tremendous. But you know what? 12 or 13 wrestling pay-per-views a year, after a while, man, I don't know. There's only so much Rocky Road I can eat. And it's not as special as it used to be. So I don't know how you're going to find that next star. And I got to tell you, it's harder. It gets harder every day, and I don't envy those. Well, I do in a way. I was going to say I don't envy those guys at FCW or NXT, whatever it may be, training right now because they want close to 100 kids training at one time under one roof. At different times, yes, but out of those people, how many do you really think are going to make it? There's not many.
A small amount of you and I both know. I mean, it's
exactly
percentages are not in your favor.
No. So what is going to entice somebody to come? Like, let's take Mason Ryan just as a pulling name out of the air. Mason Ryan should be a superstar. Mason Ryan has it all. He's got everything you want to see in a guy that looks like a star. He turns heads, except that one little thing that
he can't work.
Thank you. You say, yeah, well, we all said it. But the point is, he wasn't ready. And once you take those guys up there and they're not ready, some recover, some don't. Most don't, because once you get up there in that atmosphere and you're put into that position, man, you're not just one of the. You're not just being put in there and given a spot on TV and here go do 5 minutes. No, they're looking for you to be a star. It was like giving Drew McIntyre the blessing of the king, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, Drew kind of fell down a few rungs. And there were other issues going on as well, but he wasn't ready for that. And that's what I think the hardest part to figure out is who is and who isn't. And nobody can tell. Nobody knows that. There's no formula to say this guy's going to be a star. Because if you would have told me 3 years ago that CM Punk was going to be your guy, let's say 4 years.
Yeah.
No way. There is no way in hell.
No.
But the point is, as we all know, again, I think it's pretty well known, it's as individual as this is a team effort. If you don't have the team on your side, you can be the greatest wrestler, worker, entertainer in the world. But if you smile at the wrong time at ringside, or you make the wrong remark within earshot of somebody who doesn't like that, guess what, guys? That's called life. And if that guy has any kind of power, as strange as it may seem, I know you guys may not have ever heard about this before, but you may not ever get a shot if you piss off the wrong guy. And unfortunately, that's what happens too often. These guys go up there, they're not ready, and then they get skittish, and then they get scared, and then they never recover. And then you've just wasted that talent. Instead of helping him, you have too many guys who are afraid to do the right thing,
and
they want to make sure they get theirs and nobody else gets anything. So, well, of course, that's just my my opinion and observation. I'm not speaking with any knowledge of that.
somebody somewhere who's watched six tapes and has three autographs will write a blog and tell you you don't know what you're talking about.
I'm sure they will, and that's quite all right, because you can tell me all day long that I don't know what I'm talking about, that you don't know what you're talking about. I don't know, how long did you have developmental in HWA?
I'm sorry.
How long was I? Yeah, we were there for a few years, so I might have heard or seen one or two things. And it's not just the wrestling business, and it's not just WWE. It's everywhere, and it's one of those things that, like you said, you can either run with the ball, you can either hit the ball, or you can score a goal. But this, it doesn't matter if you can wrestle or outperform the next guy. If the guy in charge or the guy who oversees the system doesn't like it and he doesn't like you, you ain't going to be there.
Right.
And you'll either be playing beach volleyball or putting on the green and wherever it is you putt on the green.
You know what I want to talk to you, mention to you a little bit we didn't talk about the last time you were on either. I read it and smiled through the whole thing because you were on a real roll. The blog on your site that you wrote after you did the thing in up in the Tri-Cities,
camps,
and
schools,
about the bogus trainers and
oh yeah, that was great. I read that myself. That was spot on.
But you know, I'll tell you, Mike, why I laugh so hard, because this guy is I forget exactly how he worded, but when we were doing camps together, he'd say,
yeah.
Well, you know, Les gets pretty upset. I, on the other hand, I'm more even tempered, right? And I'm thinking, where's that even tempered guy at? I wondered.
Okay, I'm going to be the first one. When I'm wrong, I will say, you know what? I was wrong, and boy, was I wrong. And I tell you, here's another thing that everybody has to learn to love the taste of crap, and we say that a lot. And yes, boy, I used to be so mellow, and I used to just really let stuff fall off my back. And all of a sudden, you start reaching that point, and nobody understands it until you get there. No, you can. It's kind of like experience. You can tell somebody about your experiences, but you can't teach experience. So here I am. Doing this camp, or here I am doing what I'm doing. developmental, and I'm dealing with what I'm dealing with, which no one else knows unless you've been in that.
Ain't that the truth?
Yes, it is, and you know very well what I'm talking about. So when you're dealing with do this, yet don't do that, hold on, you just told me to do, wait, forget about what I said yesterday, this is today. All right, then the next day will come and you'll say, go back to doing what you did 3 days ago, which was, hold on, that's not what we did. Oh, yes, it was. So when you go through that for about 5 years, then all of a sudden you realize, in the end, it really doesn't matter, because you're going to get people in there and they're going to do what they want to do anyway. And if you want to play the game, great. And I'm all about playing the game. But there comes a point when you play the game, all you're going to play, and they don't want you in the game anymore. In other words, you can ride the bus. We're going to switch the seats up, but wait, we're going to let you off. You need to get off the bus, and we'll just keep moving on without you. That was fine. I understand, because after a while, you're on that bus trip, and I know I'm talking really abstract and out there right now, but after a long bus trip, and you're in there with some people that sometimes you might find a dagger or a knife, let's just say, somewhere. It might be in your back, your eye, wherever. It gets a little frustrating. It gets a little old. So after seeing all the pretend wrestlers, and I've seen all the guys out there who talk a great game, but when it comes right down to it, and they don't understand that we've seen it before, we've heard it before, a guy with 18 years experience and you've never had a chance, you've never had an opportunity, what's wrong with this picture? You're 285 pounds, you're 6'5". What happened? I was young, I made a mistake. Okay, well, I understand that, but what happened? Well, and then you find out what happened, and then you go, now I get it. Hold on. So there's more to it, Les, and you're right. And people don't understand why you get upset about things. Well, yeah, being around it long enough, if you don't get upset, you either don't care or you're not around it. And that's all I can say about that, because, man, I just, some things I couldn't let go and some things I did. And this camp I did, it was just so, you should have stuck around, because you would have loved it. And you would have feel good. I mean, really, you know, it was like, my gosh, guys, I mean, I understand that everybody knows, and I understand I don't know everything. I'm not going to say I sit here and tell you I know everything, because I don't. But I know a few things, and I've seen a few things, and I do know how the big companies work. I have been in the production meetings. I have been an agent. I've been a producer. I've ran our guerrilla position. I get it. I do understand what goes on. It happens everywhere. So it does upset me when people come in and say something and pretend to be something they're not. That's the biggest thing. Don't try to pretend. If you don't know, say you don't know. Well, I'll help. But please, just don't try to BS a BSer. That's all. And that's kind of where that was coming from, guys that just tried to say they were something, and training guys that don't need to be, they need to be trained before they can train guys themselves. So
there's more of them than there are of us, baby.
What's that?
I said there's more of them than there are of us.
Of course there are, and that's, again, that is the big thing that's missing. I mean, there's only so many times that you don't have the Finleys, the Regals, the Malenkos, and I'm going to say even the Mike Rotundos, or the guys that care enough that want to teach the guys, because you want to beat your head against the wall. You can tell somebody over and over and over, but at what point do you just say, okay, I told you this 6 weeks in a row, and you're still not getting it. At what point do you say, stop, cut your losses here? I mean, is it a year? Is it 2 years? We had a guy, real quick, and I apologize, just you guys throw a flag on me if I'm going over the edge, but real quick, we had a guy who came in for a one-week tryout. He was sent Dave Bautista. By Dave Bautista, he worked out in the gym, and Dave said, you ought to go down to FCW. Look great. Fantastic body. He came in for a week. Well, first of all, basic footwork, how you walk in the ring, just basic. Two left feet. Let's try a lockup. Gosh, I don't know. We'll give you a whole week. Let's try it. We talked to him. We talked to him for an hour and a half. He had a kid. He was a nice guy. He didn't want to do this. He was very iffy, and he didn't think he wanted to be away from his kid. We explained to him on the road everything that goes with it.
Yeah.
Okay, the next 2 weeks go by, and the person, not now, but the person who was in charge at the time of hiring talent, called this guy to come to FCW to meet with him. 20 minutes. He comes out and says, well, I just signed, I'm not going to mention his name, but he just signed him.
Whoa.
And we looked at him and says, didn't you get our report? He said, yeah, but look at him. He's great. He looks great.
Wow.
And we said again, Ty, didn't you get our report? And he said, don't worry. He will be fine. And I swear, a month to the day, one of the trainers, again, I'm trying not to use names, but one of the trainers was working with him on just locking up and reversing a hammerlock, and he couldn't get it within a month, and he came and told us, he said, this isn't for me, I can't do it, a month, I can't do it, can't take it. He quit. So he signed this guy after we told him not to, and they went ahead and did it, just to show that they can do whatever they want. And they can. It's their company. They can do whatever they want. And they will. It's never going to change. So you and I, Les, Mike, I don't know if you bitch or kvetch all night either, but we do. You know, we can talk about it all night long and all day long, but they're going to do what they want to do. And hopefully out of somewhere they're going to find some great talent. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. But if you don't have the passion, and I heard you say earlier something about attitude. I agree 100%. I think the most important thing in this business is attitude. If you don't have the attitude of wanting to learn, wanting to listen, and understanding that nothing is written in stone, we can change it. We can make things work. But you have to have the attitude. And you have to know that you don't know. Because some of these kids coming in thinking they do know, but just because they watch it on TV, and you know,
right.
This isn't real, so we're just a bunch of old guys that don't know. Our time has passed, and we're mad because our career's gone, and we can't do it anymore. No, that's not it. The point is you don't want to listen to someone who's been there and understands that it is a game, and if you don't want to play this way, then you're going to be somewhere else.
You know, Tom, to simplify, stop and think, and everybody that you've ever worked with or the guys who have really excelled, right? We talk about having the it, or not necessarily it, but guys who have become good workers, whether it's opening card or the top of the card, they all have one thing in common. They love what they do, and it comes from their heart. Not from making a buck or not from because somebody wanted them to do it, but from it's something they love and it comes from their heart, right?
Yeah, and no one understands that. No, unless you've been there, no one understands how you could have this in your heart, how you could have this business, that passion for it, because the business I watch today, the business that I was in and teaching for the last, since 96, it wasn't the business I grew up with. Now, I still love the business and I still love watching the show on occasion. It's just, it's not what I grew up with. It's not what I grew up loving. It's not that I don't love the business. It's just that it's different. And I'm not saying
right.
it's bad. I'm just saying it's different.
Yeah.
There's things that I'm sure kids look at. Man, I there was a guy.
I'm going to be your therapist here. Mr. Pritchard,
you're not
you want to say it bad? Say so.
There was a guy I met this weekend who really loved the Body Donna gimmick. And I looked at him and I said, I hated it. I was almost uncomfortable. Not me at all gimmick. And he just, I don't know if he's just putting me over, I mean, which I'm sure he was, but he thought it was a great gimmick. And I looked at him and he just like, oh my God, how could anybody think that was a great gimmick? Well, with Sonny, I get. But the two bleach blonde guys jumping up and down, that was the most uncomfortable gimmick and horrible thing I ever did. Well, in the ring anyway. My God, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder and all what some people like. And when it comes right down to it, it's what the boss wants you to do. And if you're going to make any money in this business, again, the reality is, I guess the reality is, unfortunately, if you're going to make a living in it, you're going to have to work for a major company. And the only major company that I know of starts with a W and ends at an E. So,
sadly enough, you're right.
It's not a bad company. They've got some really good, talented people there. They've also let go of some really good, talented people. And they've also, they're changing direction, which is great, and they should when they get a new regime. And only time will tell if it's successful and better than it was. I hope it is. I hope it is for the fact that the guys coming into it don't become bitter and don't become burnout. I hope that they can have fun because I got into this to have fun. I got into this to perform. I got into this because I loved it. And if you're in it just to make a buck, like you said, I don't think you're going to be successful because you're in it for the wrong reason. If you love it, you'll make money. And if you have a job, you do something you love, it's not a job. You're enjoying yourself. So.
This is our hunting and fishing, right? I mean, some guys have jobs and then they go hunting and fishing for hobbies. But this is our job. What we do for a living is our hunting and fishing as well.
Yeah, I wish it was that, you know, the worst thing and the best thing at the same time was when the commissions went away. When the commissions were here, you couldn't have just any backyard guys rent an armory and go out and do what they do.
Right.
Now, I got into a discussion with somebody, and I know you guys are going to have to throw a flag. I know we're getting close to the end here, so interrupt me anytime, but real quick. I had a discussion with someone over the weekend about $5 wrestling. Okay, now... This guy, he was upset because these guys were making fun of some of the guys, you know, who were on it, while, you know, at the same time, the guys who were making fun of these guys had been made fun of before in another organization. So now they're just turning the tables, and he thought, boy, what a hypocritical sack of crap you are. Well, okay, I'm watching some of this $5 wrestling stuff, and I get so infuriated because they're allowing these guys to rent a recreation center or whatever it is and go out and do this crap.
I saw it, yes. I know what you're saying. You talk about Freight Train and Dynamite.
And you just shake your head and say, how can you do this? And then you figure out, and then you hear the story, okay, well, I understand why you're doing it, but guys, come on. I mean, have some pride. Have a little bit, please. You know, it's just, that's why I was going off. Like I said, you would have had a field day in Waynesville because I was going off. I was just, it was $5 wrestling. It was $2.50 wrestling. It was like
$1.50. What did you think of Freight Train's promo?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You're making fun of a guy who's you know, challenged. And, okay, they're doing it to make fun of him. And I saw it, and you have two ways of looking at it. You go, oh, yeah, that's funny, that's great. Or, you know, guys, how sick or how cruel do you have to be? Well, okay, you're giving him a chance to work, I get it, but he's mentally challenged. He's special. And you're putting him out there, and he thinks it's great, and you're letting him live his dream. I get it. But that's – they're actually putting him out there, and people see it. And it can be funny for a minute or two, but then you go, hold on. Are they serious here? Do you know, well, some of these guys are taking this seriously. I saw one kid, the Sean Van Halen kid, and I'm going, oh, my God. God. And I'm watching George South, and I don't know George South at all. I've met him a couple times, but George, I just know, is going, oh, my God, man, this is just, I mean, it's embarrassing. And if there was a commission, you know, that wouldn't happen. I'm not saying bring the commissions back. I'm just saying there were good things that happened when you got rid of the commission.
But you know, as I was watching this thing, what I saw, and then I finally said to the person I was watching with, I said, they're doing a parody of the parody they see, doing the parody of what wrestling really was years ago.
Exactly. No kidding. Yeah, and that's where I looked at it and I said, my God, Jack Briscoe would kill him. I'm thinking of this because I've actually seen guys do this years ago, looking this bad, in Tennessee, and I went off on them. And some of the guys, you know, I even wrote about it in there, and they get mad about it because they say, oh, you're just bitter and you don't like any of that and you're just mad. I'm bitter and I'm angry because you guys are actually in the ring pretending and playing wrestler and you never took the time to learn. And that's not your fault. There weren't territories, and by the time you got there, it's not your fault. I get it. But a guy like if Kyle Matthews can make his way to Japan, the kid is how tall? 5'7"? Above?
No, maybe a little. He's maybe an inch taller than me. He's about 5'9", I think.
Yeah, well, but if this kid. Yeah, he was trained by Ted Allen, too, who, okay, we all know Ted, and he had respect and was well-respected in the business. So if Kyle Matthews can go out and find his way to Japan or find his way to other places, because not every place is the same, but if he can go and find his way somewhere and he wanted it that bad, then there's no reason that you can't do the same. There's no reason, because if you want it bad enough, you want to be somewhere good, then you would find it. And there's not that many out there. That's what I'm saying. You're going to have to look. I'm talking about the guys out there. I don't know what Mexico's doing. I'm not sure I'd want to even be in Mexico these days. But
I thought
Japan, yeah, so, I mean, God almighty, I don't care. But Japan, I mean, is got to be doing some kind of business. I don't know how Puerto Rico's doing. But the point I'm trying to make is, if it's not happening over here in the States, there's got to be somewhere that it is. And if it's not, you can find it. How did Kyle Matthews find it? Sure, he had help with Ted. Okay, great. How about finding Kyle, or how about finding someone else and asking them, networking, getting your name out there. You know, the Facebook thing, like you said, I mean, I'm new to it. I did it over the summer. Again, thanks to my wife, it's working. I'm making connections, but at the same time, I've been guilty of it too. Hey, I don't want to get on there and say, well, today's a great day, I'm going to go shopping. And now I just went to the bathroom. Hey, that Chick-fil-A sure was good in the mall.
Well, Mike Willingham has got his grandchildren, and his there will be more famous than you and me before it's all over.
I understand why people do it, but at the same time, I'm trying to use it as a promotional tool. And that's what these guys should try and do. and get your name out there, man. I mean, WWE should be your goal because you're going to make the most money, no doubt. But there's other people in it who want to wrestle for the passion and the love of doing it. I get it. There's nothing wrong with that. But find some people who are in it the same way. Real quick, I went to PWS this weekend, Pro Wrestling Syndicate, Pat Buck. He had some tremendous kids on the card. He drew a hell of a house. And Pat also has that passion and desire for the business. So
where was that at, Tommy?
It was in Rahway, New York, New Jersey. Rahway, New Jersey.
Okay, cool.
But he drew a hell of a house. He had some really good kids on there. Not everybody can learn overnight, obviously, but there are places to go. You just have to look. You have to search, and you have to get people to know who you are and find out about you. But if your crap is on YouTube and people tell you it's crap, don't get defensive. Ask them why. Tell me what I did wrong. Ask what I did wrong. I mean, you've had people ask you. I've had people ask me. And
sure.
Then they get mad about it. Well, if you're going to get mad about it, you're in the wrong business. So.
Yeah, if you can't take criticism in this business, you're not going to last very long, that's for sure.
The other thing I say is show me a man who's never got heat in this business, and I'll show you a man who's never been in this business.
I agree with that, too.
I
hate to change subject, but Mike, don't you owe me a book?
I do. You're on the list. You should be receiving one.
The checks in the mail? Is that?
No, really. I mean, no. I said make sure Les Thatcher gets a book.
I told Greg Oliver, I said I wanted all you guys to autograph it. He said, fat chance of that ever happened.
I just got mine
today.
Well,
I was just which book is coming out now, Mike? Which project do you guys have?
This is Heroes and Icons. It's the latest installment in a series by Greg Oliver.
Yeah, Steve Johnson and Greg Oliver.
Yeah, and I collaborated on this.
Forward by J.J. Dillon. I have it right in front of me. Let me just say this because I saw Steve and Greg this weekend and told them the same thing. I'll tell you, this is 5 years in the making, man, and the number one, I didn't give it away. Didn't tell them who number one was, but a lot of the kids, if you want to tell them, that's great, but a lot of the kids are going to say, who? What?
I know.
Get it, but... And I was saying before you came on, I don't know if you heard, but Jack Pfeffer was a big. I was very interested in what he did, and because of what he did. But Jim Lundis, guys like that, Buddy Rogers, and Toots Mont, and those guys, you know, back in that era. It's amazing. It's a different era. It's TV, no TV, and all the things that those guys did. It would be interesting to find out how this business evolved into what it is today. If you really loved it and really had a passion for it and were a student of the game, what a great book, man. You guys did a hell of a job.
I appreciate it. It's really, I mean, that's the stuff I love. You know, that's my era. That's my generation. And I agreed with everything you and Les said. I mean, you're preaching to the choir.
Real quick, and I know it's getting late, and I know you guys got to wrap it up, but real quick, I said this to Greg and Steve as well, and, you know, because in the tag team book, the Heavenly Bodies were Don and Al Green? For God's sake!
Believe it or not, I wrestled those Heavenly Bodies.
I mean, yeah, I know, but God, I mean, come on, I was Pat Rose and me, and then we had Stan and me, and then Del Rey, but Don, could I not at least get one mention in there?
That's on Greg and Steve, I'm afraid.
Well, I buried them too. I said, can you put a book out of guys who never got really any merchandise or an action figure, DVDs and stuff and anything, but they were on the perimeter of the business. Could I get at least a mention there? My God. Look, man, Heroes and Icons is incredible. And it's a must for any.
Well, it's a monster too, isn't it? It's going to take a while to get through. I mean, you know, that's very rare when a publishing company lets you, you know, have like a 500 page book. I mean, it's mammoth.
Well, I've been going through picking and choosing. It's over 500. Yeah, it's like 5:50. I was just going to see, but I'm not going to take up my time. Promise, man. 546 pages. Yeah.
It's a big one. Just remember one thing, Tom. My name is Rufus R. Jones, and the R stands for guts.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, Rufus R. Jones was also Buster Lloyd.
Buster Lloyd
at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What a great guy. Did you ever meet him, Tommy?
No, I never met him, but I knew very well of his background, yeah.
Cooked up some good possum, too, right, Les?
Huh?
Cooked up some good possum, too, right?
I never tried it. I heard that he did.
Hang on. And I'm also reading about the maniac here, too, so and I did get some quotes in there as well, but Mark Lewin. But gosh, man, yeah, it is a great book, and I know you guys have to wrap this up. But it's always a pleasure to come on and talk. And I like listening to you before, Les, because you're kind of thinking, you're saying the same thing I'm thinking, and then I get on here, we start bitching, and then everybody goes, why are you so bitter? And I'm thinking, well, I'm not. And then they listen back and go, wait, maybe I am. So.
Well,
anyway.
They've been eating McDonald's so long, Tommy, they've never tasted real steak, so they wouldn't know.
Right. Well, that's true. And I'm just noticing here Jack Pfeffer is mentioned. I was going to say you have to have Pfeffer in this book, obviously.
Got to be mentioned.
And that's another name that the kids would never know and even think about looking up as Jack Pfeffer and what he did in the business and how he's relevant and why he would be or Pinky George, or any of those guys, man. The NWA book was another great book, man. But you guys done, this one outdoes them all. Well, I'm not going to say that. It doesn't outdo them all. It's a great book. I'll say that.
Thanks.
It really is. But, anyway, anything else, guys? Because I think I've kept you up, and I don't know if we're past our bedtime or not.
Well, you know how we old people are. We are asleep. You better give me a call, and I want to... I'm going to be down in Maggie. Thanks for the whole week of Thanksgiving. So maybe.
Well, now
we
I'm here. Here's the deal. I'm in the middle. Like as I said, even not working, it's amazing that I have busy. I'm as busy as I am. I'm in the process of moving back to Knoxville at the end of the month and just getting settled in. So I'm really working on some projects to get my ass in gear too. And try to get some things going around that area. So it's just it's a never-ending process, but I have to say this, regardless of what I say, regardless of what we talk about, you know, on any of these shows or in any of my blogs, I still love the business, and I still remember what it was like, and I still have that feeling when I see somebody, which is rare, when I see somebody who has that passion, because it's hard. But you know when you see it, and you know when you feel it, when you see somebody in the ring that they believe it and make you believe it. So we can talk about it all day long about what's wrong, but there are a few things they do right, and I do like it when that happens. So those are the moments I wait for.
Me too.
Me too.
Tommy, always a pleasure, my friend. Please stay in touch, and especially when you get settled, I want your new address.
No doubt. And I have
you should try to get together.
Yeah, fantastic. That sounds great. I'd love to. And Mike, listen.
Yeah, Tom.
Thank you very much. I read your columns all the time, and I enjoy it as well. So keep up the good work. And the next book you guys come out with, like I said, I'd like to just. You know, do it about guys who really didn't get a whole lot of merchandise and stuff, but need to, and maybe.
No, I appreciate it, Tom. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but I love your blog. I love the story of you starting out with Paul Bosch and some really great stuff in there. You do an excellent blog.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to come up with a new one this week, and it's just really hard because I'm brain dead right now. So, I try to do it weekly, man. But you know, again, writer's block is a poisonous thing at times. So, anyway, guys, thank you. Really do appreciate it, and I will hopefully get to be on here again soon when I have something new to talk about.
Absolutely.
Well, it was a pleasure being on with you guys tonight. It really was. You guys are are near and dear to my heart. You've said the things that I feel, and I think the main thing out of this is we all have a passion for the business, and that's the key.
Mike, I guess I won't see you till August, will I?
Maybe not less. You know, who knows? Who knows where we may cross paths before then. Maybe I'll see you in the mountains. Who knows?
There you go. Doc, I wanted to tell you, too, that Frankie Kane wasn't at the Legends reunion in Nashville, although he was there 2 years ago and I was there, because I was going to line it up so we could hook up with him so you could actually meet him.
Yeah. Well, I hope that, because I actually talked to Sandy about this, maybe going to Mobile this year, and hopefully
yes.
he might be able to make it to that one. But, that's my bucket list right there.
All right. Very good. All right, guys. Mike, always a pleasure, my friend.
Same
God
here,
bless
buddy.
You both.
Same here.
And I guess see everybody next week. Take care, Tommy.
Bye now.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys very much.
Later.
We thank you for listening to the Tribecast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.